Welcome back to the 16 Bitchin' Podcast.
This is shit! Everything's shit!
Your number one resource for chatting about games and talking a load of old bollocks. Outside of a Retro Gamer Boy video, that is.
Take that!
So this is episode 2 in season 2 of the podcast. I really enjoyed the first one in recording it, and now that it's all edited and I've had a chance to listen to it and check it out, I'm happy with how it's turned out. I like the format. I like the way I've gone with it. It was a little on the long side. I was aiming for 45 minutes, but the thing is, you got to take into account, it's not just recording for 45 minutes. It's when you've edited and cut it down, stuff like that. What does it end up being? And you just don't know until you've done it. But it was bloody close. I was bloody close. So anyway, we're going to go on with it. We're going to talk a little bit about what's going on in the world of me. Not for too long, don't worry. And then we'll be on about our modern game, our retro game, and our indie game. Now, first off, how am I? You might be wondering. Well, honestly, not epic. Today has been expensive. I have just had to fork out over £1,000. Over £1,000. You might remember in the last podcast at the very start of it. Probably don't, don't worry. I was saying how my back is fucked and I'm in a lot of pain lately. Basically, I've got to man up and buy a new mattress. That's one of them adult things, isn't it? When you get to a certain age where your bed, the thing you fucking sleep on, is what's killing you. So you got to be an adult and buy a new one. But the thing is, you think, I'll just buy one of the cheaper ones. I can't afford an expensive mattress. I cannot afford it. I've got to go cheap. Well, I'll tell you what, every cheap one, I reckon they deliberately make it so it fucking destroys you. Because I went on one, when I got there, you get a testament, of course, I laid on one that was £700. I thought, is this the cheapest I can find? This is shit. I tell you what, weren't nearly as shit as how it felt. It was like lying on top of a paper bag filled with crushed Pepsi cans. All of these bits stabbing into me. I thought, are those the springs? What sadomasochist bastard invented this thing? I thought, oh, hang on, I've got to get up. Kids, help. Daddy's stuck. Daddy can't move. And then someone comes over and says, hello, can I help you? Yes. I need a chiropractor now, you cunt. Fucking hell, that was an experience. And they're shifting me around these beds, and they've got this machine with a bed attached to it. It's all sorts of bollocks. Lie down, and we will find what kind of bed you need. I need one that's comfortable and cheap. I know what I need. Get me that. Well, apparently that doesn't exist. There's no such fucking thing. We haven't invented one like that yet. I found comfortable, but ouch. My wallet burnt, on fire, incinerated, fucked off to the land of the dead. Jesus, I can't believe I spent a grand on a mattress. It wasn't just that, to be fair. 50 quid was to take away the old mattress, which is good because obviously, rather than getting rid of yours with the whole hassle of, how do I get this to the dump? I have a van, so yes, I can put it on the roof rack, but I still got to try and tie the bastard on there. I mean, if you go to a dump, a city dump, in a van, you pay more sometimes because, oh, you're not in a, what do you call it, non-commercial vehicle or some bollocks. Basically, I spend money. So the £50 thing, that was going to happen no matter what. You know what I mean? There was no way around that. And you think, for these fuckers to come, give me a new one, and take the old one away for an additional charge of 50, fine, that's not so bad. But I can't believe I've spent over £1,000 in total on a fucking mattress with insurance. What the bloody hell's going to happen to it? Is it going to fly away? And another 50 for some cunt to take the old one away. Good luck to him getting down my staircase. I think it's basically a death sentence. Anyway, there's that shit. On a cheerier note, week before I had to do this crap, I was introduced to a new line of Game Boy by Stav of Chronic Spartan YouTube channel. Now, he told me, or actually, I had heard word of it, mentioned it, and then he found a website, and boom, I've bought a new Game Boy. Oh. And it was, what was it called? Funny Playing is the name of the website. Basically, it's new technology. So it's not an old Game Boy that's been modded. It's a new one. New screen, new motherboard, new all of this shit. There is some old Game Boy stuff used in there, I think. Sometimes. But I bought a Game Boy Color one. If you are watching this on YouTube, then you can see footage of me trying to build it, because you buy all the parts, they don't put it together for you. You put it together. So for like, what did I spend? Just shy of £70. I would not have treated myself to this if I knew I was going to spend out this amount of money on a fucking mattress, I tell you that much. But for 70 odd pounds, I bought this Game Boy Color of all the parts that I had chosen. So I picked all these bits, I put this thing together. It took a little while to do, because it's very fucking fiddly when it comes to building anything console-wise. But this is quite simple. Which is good, because guess what? It didn't come with an instruction manual. I've opened a Game Boy before. I've opened numerous Game Boys before. This is all new tech. This is new stuff. Nothing is like the old shit. Even where the screws go is different. This thing is rechargeable, by the way. It doesn't take modern batteries, which is great. But basically, I just wanted you to get... I had no idea how to build this fucking thing, and it didn't come with instructions. It's like, okay, maybe the instructions are online. There's tutorials and bollocks, but at the time, it's like, oh, God's sake, how'd you... Fucking hell. I managed to build this thing, and I can't deny it is amazing. The screen is beautiful. It makes all of my old Game Boy games look fantastic. I haven't found a Game Boy game it's not compatible with yet, although I thought I had. I thought I had originally. This thing has settings and shit. I put in a copy of Pokemon Red, and it didn't like it. It was glitching. I was walking along a road in the game, and I was encountering water Pokemon that you only find when using Surf. My sprite was half black. Don't understand that shit. And everything was a mess. Everything was a glitchy mess. Stav told me you've got it set to Game Boy Color settings. They're the default settings. What have I? Okay. Do this, go here, right, da 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 da. And then you set it to original Game Boy. Well, he was right, it worked absolutely fine after that, so... Again, could have been avoided if it came with, like, one crappy little print on a crappy bit of paper, fucking instructions. Whatever, aside from that, fantastic Game Boy. So those are the things that have happened with me lately. Basically, in a nutshell, I'm fucking poor! Rah! Than ever! Great! Fucking skin. Fucking skin. Yep. So let's try and cheer me up by talking about some bloody video games I've been playing lately. Yeah, let's try that. So I'll get down a fucking cup of coffee first. I must be missing a point. I need a coffee and a joint. Oh, that's better. Right, so for our modern game, it's one that's been out for a while in one form or another, but it was recently-ish released on the Nintendo Switch, and that's how I played it. This game is an odd one, but it's done so incredibly well for itself that it's got a whole big franchise now. So this is Phoenix Wright, Ace Attorney. Now, in doing a little bit of research for this game, I was shocked to find out that its original release, its original form, was not what I thought it was. I thought the original form was on the Nintendo DS. Not 3DS, DS. So that old is what I thought. No. It was released originally in Japan before anywhere else by... Not a lot, not like years and years, but a sizable chunk, because the first release was on Game Boy Advance. How interesting is that? I would love to play a translated cart of it, but good luck finding one, eh? The first time I ever played this was actually on the Wii, the Nintendo Wii. It was one of the digital games. I remember playing it thinking, it's got a weird layout. The way this game is set out on the screen is odd. And then it occurred to me, this is a DS game that's been made digital. And lo and behold, I was right, thinking, oh well, I would have bought it on DS had I had known, but I didn't know that was the original thing at the time, so I got the Wii one. And I got all the way to the last chapter. There are five chapters in this original game. I did 1, 2, 3, and 4, and I got to 5, and I was bored shitless, and I couldn't push myself to do it. Having bought it again on the Switch, I thought, now this time I'm going to do it. I didn't remember why I didn't beat the game, having got so far. But I thought, I remember enjoying the game. So let's do it this time. Let's beat Phoenix Wright, Ace Attorney. So what is this game? Well, It's a visual novel game, but don't you dare run away, you. I see you. You come back here, you prick. Yes, it's a visual novel game, but there is a high level of interaction. There's a lot of stuff you got to do. There's a lot of puzzle solving. There's a lot of point and click. Yeah, I know. Remember, it was DS for a lot of us first. I really wonder how the fuck it would have worked on Game Boy Advance. But whatever, maybe it was more akin to the Switch one, but then again, I don't know, I don't fucking know. You, as you can figure out from the title, are an attorney. You're the defense attorney. In short, each one of the chapters within this game is its own mini story that links into the one big story. For the early levels, basically, let's just describe chapter one. Chapter one, there has been a murder. To keep it easy, it's done a Columbo. You see who the murderer is from different sort of perspectives. Then you get to play the part of the attorney, and you have to prove the innocence of someone who's being blamed as the killer, someone who's being framed. And this, for the first episode, turns out this person was a friend of yours, Larry Butts. There's a name. If something smells, it's usually the Butts, is a thing that's said throughout the fucking game. It's only like the first two chapters, I believe, that you get this Columbo treatment where you see who the murderer is. After that, you're on your own. Which, honestly, is much more enjoyable, not having a clue. And yes, Gravy Tom will tell you, I'm a big fan of Columbo, so he's probably surprised at that if he's checking this podcast out, which probably isn't. In case he isn't, Tom,
fuck you.
But any hoops, with this early chapter, chapter one, you see who the killer is, you get all these bits of evidence, and you have to put forth the bits of evidence at the right time, the right piece for the right time. You have to press the person trying to get the information out of them, because they make a statement, and you have to find holes in the statement. Certain things they've said that don't add up. Like at one point, I'm not going to give too much away, because I don't want to ruin anything plot-wise, but the guy who we know to be the killer says, oh, yes, I was here at this time, dead on 1 o'clock. I know I was there at 1 o'clock. You get all these options of certain things you can do. One of them is to press. So if you press on this, you push the person for more information. You could say, like, you say you know it was 1 o'clock when you were there. He goes, oh, yes, yes, it was definitely 1 o'clock. How do you know that? This other piece of evidence I have here says there was a power cut. There was no clock. There was no way for you to know the time. You've said yourself you don't wear a watch. How do you know it was 1 o'clock? And you would think, what's that got to do with finding out this person killed this person? Not a lot with the tiny bits of evidence, but you put them under pressure and people fuck up, don't they? People slip up when they realise there's a little bit of a mistake in their lie. And one lie leads to another lie, leads to the big lie that they are the fucking killer. You've got to find the evidence, you've got to present the evidence, you've got to push, you've got to do all this cool stuff. But yes, visual novel at its heart, there's a lot of reading, but the story is very good. It's a very enjoyable story throughout the game and develops well. A lot of people within, a lot of characters within, I should say, they're very likeable. There's not anyone that irritates the shit out of me. There's this one girl at the start. She's a medium, psychic medium. She annoyed me a lot to begin with, but then, you know, you got to like her, to be honest. Now, with that aside, graphics. What is this thing like graphically? Well, like a lot of visual novels, as you can imagine, it's more of an anime style. There are animations in the way they talk, the way they move, but there's not a lot for this first entry in the franchise. There's a lot of still images and stuff like that. There's not a lot of movement. And for what there is, it's kind of repeated frames. You see the same stuff again and again. That's why it's all about what you're reading. It's not a lot about this person moving around, picking their nose, having a fag, stuff like that. Oh yes, if you're American, yeah, having a fag means smoking a cigarette over here. Yeah. Yeah, that's a translation that makes no sense, innit?
You guys know that everyone thinks you're total fags, right?
Here's an interesting bit of information for you. Apparently, a team of 7 developed the game over a course of 10 months. Written and directed by Shu Takumi. I undoubtedly said that completely fucking wrong. It was originally planned as a Game Boy Color game about a private investigator. The game was designed to be simple. It ain't simple for shit. It really isn't. You get to grips with things easy enough, but when you look at it from afar, when you stand back and look at this game and how everything's done, it's like, what the fuck fuck are you doing? It looks kind of complicated to begin with. You think, this thing was meant to be for the Game Boy Color at first? How? How would that have fucking worked? Apparently that guy at Takumi wanted it to be easy enough that even his own mother could play it. Alright, whatever. While the original version of the game takes place in Japan, the localization is set in the United States. And this became an issue when localizing later games, where the Japanese setting was a lot more obvious, but I've only ever played the first one, so fuck knows. On a whole, the gameplay, it's a lot of fun, but if you're not into a lot of reading, you're gonna get bored. I recommend this game, I've recently beaten it. Chapter 1, 2, 3, and 4, very good, interesting story. I was sucked in a lot of the time, it kept me going. Then I got to that Chapter 5, and I remembered why I stopped playing. Chapter 5 is a fucking slog. Back and forth, this person, that person, I spoke to this person. Person A, they've sent me to Person B. I've gone and spoken to Person B. Person B sent me to Person A. Now I'm talking to Person A again about shit they could have said already. Now I'm back to Person fucking B. And on and on and on, oh my God. Chapter 5 is not well done. It isn't. But aside from the back and forth bollocks, some of the puzzles are horseshit. There was a couple where I just thought, okay, I'm looking at a bit of security footage. I need to find the thing that stands out. And honestly, I'm looking at it going, I can't see it. So I start clicking all over the screen. Such horseshit when you know you have to do that. And then when I finally get the ba-ding, oh, right, I clicked on the thing. What was it? A light bulb that was out of place. Are you taking the piss? Chapter 5 is not good. And when I had done it, the whole story reveal, it like picked itself up. I thought, oh, here we are. No, it's really getting going now. And then it was just like, yeah, I did it. Oh. Okay, right. Well, I guess that solves that then. You rest him. He's guilty. It's not the guy I'm defending. It's, yeah, right, okay. Your Chapter 5 was wank. If you get through Chapter 1, 2, 3, and 4, and you think, I'm happy I don't want to play 5, good on you. Fuck 5. It's crap. It's not nearly as fun as Chapters 1, 2, 3, and 4. Anyway, that is our modern game. One I suggest you check out. But if you're not sure as to whether you would like a game with that much reading, maybe see if you can find someone that's done a Let's Play or a bit of gameplay footage on YouTube first. Check it out. See what you think. Of course, if you're watching this on YouTube, then you get to see a bit of footage anyway, so maybe you'll be swung by that. I don't fucking know. Of course, if you are watching this on YouTube, or rather, you want to, you have to wait for a week after the release of this one. I should have said this at the start. I'm getting back into the swing of podcasts, you see. Every time a new episode of this podcast is released, the audio version, the video version, is released a week later. This is because I don't want YouTube nicking all the numbers, like it fucking tends to. Algorithm bollocks. Now moving on swiftly, we will be going on to our retro game. This is a game I had as a kid, and I have not played it for the longest time. This game is Harvest Moon 2. Now, why have I not played Harvest Moon 2 for the longest time? A couple of reasons. One, the battery in the fucking game cart died, and I just never got round to changing it. Two, I fell in love with the game Stardew Valley. Stardew Valley is better than any Harvest Moon game ever. I've said that before. There's a previous podcast episode where I've spoken about Stardew Valley. Check that out if you want to know more. But Harvest Moon 2, why the fuck are we talking about that today? Well, recently, I tell you what, let's just be honest. I felt like I've had a lot of bad luck with everything. You know when you feel like you're going through a crap period and everything that can shit on you will shit on you? I felt like that. And I've come home from work and I felt defeated. Just beaten down by life itself. I know this sounds depressing, but it's true. I'm being honest. I'm getting it out there. This is my therapy, I guess. I would get home, and rather than play a game, I would just sort of sit there and stare into oblivion. I'm tired, I'm stressed, I've had enough. I don't want to be here, I don't want to be there, I don't want to be fucking anywhere. Eventually, I managed to get a bit cheery, and I think, I need to play a game to cheer me the fuck up. because that's what I do. I need to play a game. What do I want to play? And I'm looking at all of them and I'm thinking, I don't know, none of these. So I'm looking like through the library. I'm thinking, none of these do I want to play. I need something a bit mind-numbing, basic. I don't want to overdo it with complexities. And the game has to get going from the word go. I can't sit still and read a load of shit. So I would never have been able to say, Phoenix Wright's the one to play for now. No, I needed something basic and get going. You know, I thought maybe Pokemon Red. I thought, no, at the time, it's like, I'm not in the mood. I need something even more basic. And I don't know why, but Harvest Moon 2 popped into my head. And I even made the effort. I went and got another fucking battery, fitted it in the cartridge. That's all working fine. And then I got this new Game Boy. Oh, it looks stunning on this new Game Boy. This is a game where I will play it for a bit one day, and then maybe not for a week. Or I'll play it for a solid week and nothing else. It depends. I don't have to try and remember shit when I pick it up. You just pick it up and away you go. It's a very simple game. It's been best described, I believe, as like the ultimate pocket version of a farming simulator game. And I think that's a really good description for it, because it is. There's minimal complexity. There's not a lot to this game. It's very much if you got 5 minutes, or if you just want to play a game and not think. It has helped me a lot in de-stressing. So now, Harvest Moon 2, yes, it's one I had as a kid. How is this any different from Harvest Moon 1? And I won't lie, I've never played Harvest Moon 1 on Game Boy. I would love to, but when I looked recently thinking, I don't have this one, I've never had this one, maybe I'll look into getting it. I kept finding the colour version. I'm a big fan of original Game Boy. I thought, since this is Harvest Moon 1, I'd like to find original, non-coloured. I know, you're thinking, why would you do that? Well, the colour version goes for like 15, 20 quid, something like that. The non-coloured version goes for a lot, lot more. We're talking over 50. The game is rare. It is not better, it is not special, it certainly has nothing more to offer. In fact, it has less than the colour one, obviously. It's simply more expensive because it's fucking rarer. They only did a small run of them, and then it went to colour. When Harvest Moon 1 came out, it was a big hit. Now Harvest Moon has evolved so much, farming simulator games have evolved so much, this is so basic, not many people would want to play this one. You only play it if you have nostalgia for it, I reckon. Hence me with Harvest Moon 2. There is nostalgia. It was the first farming simulator game I ever fucking played. But I wanted number one, found out the price, thought fuck you. But anyway, the differences between 1 and 2 are thus. So number 2, you are able to build a sheep pen and buy sheep. You're able to build a greenhouse. You can also walk around the town, which apparently you can't do in 1, which sounds odd. Because, yes, in 2 there's a town with the tool shop, animal shop, clinic, seed shop. It's not the most exciting bloody town in the world, is it? I mean, there's a library, but there's no game store, so they've done that fucking wrong. Although you can buy a game to play within this game. Yes, it's gone down that rabbit hole of what the fuck am I doing with my life. In case you hadn't figured it out from me saying farming simulator all the time, you own a farm. The farm is a shithole. It is your job to tidy it up, get some animals going. You have 3 years, I think it's 3, to make this farm sustainable, make it good, fix it, make it a working place where you get profit. Then basically, you've essentially beaten the game, and it just keeps going on. And you can keep going until you've unlocked everything and you've got the perfect farm that this game can give you. In the past, I remember vaguely, I would start off, clean the damn place up, and work on getting as many animals as I can. This time around, I decided to do something a little bit different. I saved up like mad, and I got the greenhouse as soon as I could. There's animals on my farm, but I've gone out of my way to get the greenhouse. Why have I done that? I think it's solely because when I was playing this when I was younger, I only ever got that thing once, because it was like the last thing I got. I think it's the most expensive thing you can get, aside maybe from having a house extension, which, if I remember correctly, does fuck all for you. Because unlike in later Harvest Moon games, you can't get married in this one. You can't have relationships, you can't have kids, can't have anything like that. This game is bare basic. Doesn't have any of that shit. It's the farm. That's it. The graphics, really nice and chibi-ish. When you talk to someone in one of their shops, you get more of an animated picture of them, more anime-like picture of them. And it's really decent. It's well done, good pixel art. I like it. When it's just you, or you see one of the characters walking around town, kind of, it's very chibi-ish. It's just a pair of eyes on a little round head with hair or a hat. That's it. Very basic. But graphically, it's quite good. If you play it on original Game Boy and everything's in, well, black and white or piss green and darker piss green, it all looks fine. It all looks fine. There's nothing wrong with this 8-bit game in terms of graphics. The reason why I'm pointing out that the graphics are good, not stellar, but they're good enough, is I want to mention something that bugs the shit out of me now. The music. The music tracks are very short and very looped. In an annoying way. Every time you enter a new area, the music track that's playing will restart. You will be going in and out of areas all the time. You'll be going in the barn, feeding the animals, leaving the barn through the back to sort this out. Then you've got to go back into the barn to go through the barn to come out the other side. Now you're in the main part of the farm and you want to go to the field, let's say. So you go to the field. We've gone several areas there. Here's what it would sound like. I shit you not. Here's what it sounds like when the music's going and you do exactly what I just said. Did you hear that? That's essentially it. That's what it is like musically. This is one of the few Game Boy games that I can't bloody stand to listen to when playing. Normally, I love having the music on. I love 8-bit music. This game would sound great if it weren't for the fucking fact that the damn tracks start over every time. I mean, they're annoying as hell enough as it is because they're bloody looped and short. But when you go in and out of this fucking area and into another area and it restarts every time, annoying as sin. I bloody hate it. No idea if it's like that in the first one, because again, I've never played it. One day I will get that, but I'm still going to be a prat and look out for the non-coloured version. Why not, eh? Just for the collection side of things, although I'm definitely not spending through the nose, because what was that I said at the start of the podcast? Oh yeah, that's right, I'm fucking poor! So has this game helped cheer me up with being in this bleak, crappy mood that I've been in lately? Yes. It's a nice slice of nostalgia for me. The game did exactly what I wanted to. It was basic, mind-numbing, kept me going, made me feel like there's certain goals, things that are achievable. It's helped me. This is a good game. The music's crap, but everything else is good. I would recommend it if you can get it cheap. If you've played it when you were a kid, I highly recommend trying it because that nostalgia might be there for you. But again, I can't deny, if you want to try a good farming simulator game, stick with Stardew Valley. It's still the best farming simulator game. Not that I've ever tried the games called Farming Simulator. They look fucking overly complicated. Even though I think the first one started on something like the Commodore 64. I've seen images of it and, well, it looks like shite, but I cannot fathom that fucking game. I can't. Stick with Stardew Valley. No, I'm not editing that out. Bollocks here. Let's move on, because there's really not a lot to talk about of Harvest Moon 2. There really isn't. Let's move on to something quite exciting, though. An indie game that I got for the Evercade. This is a great little game. I've managed to beat it. Took a little while, but it's highly enjoyable. And I'm probably going to pronounce it wrong because the name's a little dumb. It's called Alwa's Awakening. So So one very interesting thing about this game, or at least I find it interesting, is there is a 16-bit version and an 8-bit version. But the thing is, the 8-bit version looks so good that it doesn't look that different from the 16-bit version. So either you could say the 8-bit version is really well done, or the 16-bit version is more on the basic scale. You know, it's not pushing the graphics to the extreme or anything like that. But that's just the graphics. There's an 8-bit version, there's a 16-bit version. So yeah, it's a game I have on the Evercade. I've had a lot of fun with it. It's a great game. But it's also available on Windows, Switch, PS4, Xbox One. They made an NES cart for it, which must be where the 8-bit one was originally made for. I guess diehard fans go, no, we want it on the NES. Okay, whatever. Just get the Evercade one. One of these days I'm going to have to do an Evercade special, aren't I? I'm just going to have to do that and nerd out and be a massive fucking sellout-y whore for the thing. It was incredibly enjoyable. The music, it's brilliant 8-bit music. Very good, very fitting, very enjoyable, happy to listen to, keeps me in the correct, decent, upbeat mood, I guess, for playing the game, which is a Metroidvania game. And honestly, we'll get to the story in a minute for what it's worth, but the gameplay had me a bit confused at first. I've played Metroidvania games before, go me, I've played Hollow Knight, Symphony of the Night. Fuck, I've played a bunch of Metroidvania games, including, of course, the later Metroid games that were that. But this game had me confused, because for the longest time when I first started playing it, I went to, let's say, Area A, checked everything out there, and then I went to Area B, and I thought, I've checked everything out here, where the fuck am I going to go? And it was very much, oh, where the fuck do I go? I couldn't figure it out. I tried everything. I eventually gave up and thought, I'm enjoying the game, but I've been lost for too long. It's time to look online. So I didn't want to look at a walkthrough, so I looked at tips. I googled tips for Alwa's Awakening, and straight away, there's the number one tip on what to do. This game has a lot of hidden walls. The hidden walls look exactly the same as all the other fucking walls. And you don't smash them. It's not like a Castlevania thing where you go out and smash it. No, you can walk clear through the bastard. And I thought, there's a room that had nothing in it. Oh, God. Fuck me. There was a room with nothing in it. Maybe there was the wall at the end you could walk through. I thought, did I try walking through it? I tried hitting it, I bet. And it didn't do shit. Fuck. So I had to remember where the room is, because, like most Metroidvania games, this game does get a map. Kind of. The map doesn't show you what rooms look like. It's just, like, yellow lines. If you've ever played Symphony of the Night and it's all blue lines, but when you've been to a certain area, sorry, it's all empty, it's all clear lines, and when you've gone to a certain area, it fills in with blue. Certain save point areas, I think, become red. That's it. You get basic colour symbols for certain things. One colour for I've been here. One colour for this is like a save spot or a checkpoint place, as it is in this game. Stuff like that. Doesn't show you the detail of what's in what area. So I had to remember where this fucking room was. It had nothing in it. And I got to the room. And then I thought, oh, wait. Bring up the map. Yep. The map has a line going across. It doesn't end in a solid downwards line. So it doesn't look like it's blocked off, meaning it's hinting that I can continue. So I just walked to the end. Oh, look, I'm in a new place. I was like, you son of a bastard, fuck. All the time I spent wandering around for no reason when the fucking path ahead was before me. Dick salad. Can't believe I did that. Still can't believe. But that's my number one tip for anyone who wants to play this game. Shit's hidden in plain sight. It's got the typical thing of Metroidvania where, like, you go into a room, say you see platforms, or you see something, you think, how do I get to that? And you think of every tool you have in your arsenal, and you think, I can't get that. Rather than spend forever jumping around like a knob, you think, I clearly need something. I'll come back here later. Like maybe double jump, or some sort of hover thing. First real power you get in this game is the ability to make a block. Yeah, I know. This block is something you can push on floor buttons, floor panels that trigger shit. So if you want a door opened, but this button opens the door, as soon as you step off it, the door fucking shuts. Put a magic block on it. That's stuck open now. I can walk through, stuff like that. Or you put the block on the floor, you can jump on the block, and then you can jump from the block, meaning you can jump to higher areas. Stuff like that. It doesn't sound like much as a power. I can make a block. Fuck, it does help. A simple thing. It's been done many times before in other games, but it works well here. And that's the best description for Owl's Awakening. There's nothing here, really, that's revolutionary. There's nothing new, nothing groundbreaking, nothing super-duper special, aside from the simple fact that this is a fucking good game. It's a lot of fun. It's very well done. Everything's enjoyable-ish. I'll get to the things I didn't enjoy in a minute. But I just want to point out, this is a very good game. The most successful version for it is probably on the Evercade. The NES one, I can't imagine that being too fucking accessible. Recently come out on the Switch, and that one comes alongside, so you're buying two games for the price of one, I guess, comes alongside the sequel, which I know nothing about, but I do know I want to try it. So I'm going to get that one day when I'm in the mood for a Metroidvania game. I can never do a Metroidvania game and then another Metroidvania game. I have to do one and then a bloody long break. You know, I like variety. Give me a break. The story is quite simple. You play the part of a young girl named Zoe, and she's been magically transported to the land of Alwa. Honestly, I hate that name. It's difficult for a common as muck person like me to pronounce Alwa. It just sounds stupid when I say it. I can't help it. Anyway, Zoe's been transported to this poxy place to fight off an evil overlord and his henchmen for taking over the land and bollocks, bollocks, bollocks. You get to fight these evil henchmen as the bosses. The boss fights are quite clever. It's not a case of go up and smack it. It's a case of figure out how to get to it, figure out how to avoid its special attack, then kill the bastard. Or you will die a lot. Which isn't too bad because this game has unlimited lives. But when you do die, unless you use save states, the Evercade does offer them. I have no idea about the Switch one. You can go to a checkpoint and that will have you there. But the checkpoints are, while there's a bunch of them, they are also few and far between. You might find there's only one checkpoint to a whole area. Meaning if I die fighting a boss, I gotta go from one corner of the map to another for this chunk of area. Which doesn't sound like a lot, but maybe there's a part where you just think, oh, I'll get to this bit. And these fuckers always hit me. I always lose a bit of health here. That's not the kind of crap you want before you go against a boss. I kind of wish it had closer checkpoints to bosses at times. That would be nice. But the only boss that really fucked me was the one at the end of the game. Now, I won't spoil this, but I will say this boss fight was a bastard. I even looked online trying to find videos of other people. The boss fight was a sod. I just had to look at Owl to do it because I thought, I'm doing it wrong. Why am I doing it wrong? Turns out I wasn't doing it wrong. I was just crap at doing it right. Oh, it's the only fight in the whole game that gave me a true amount of trouble. I must have tried that bloody boss fight so many times. When I did it, I was thrilled, jumping out of my chair with my badass back, going, yes, fuck you, I fucking done it, fuck this, yes, conquered the game, so glad, thoroughly enjoyed the game, but yeah, I've been at the end for too long. I need to beat it now. I need to beat this fucking game. And so I did, and got the most disappointing ending I've ever seen. Maybe not ever seen, but seen in a long time. It just sort of, boom, ended. I was like, wow. I know they want this to be like an NES game, but that's taken a bit fucking literal, isn't it? It was quite shite. I thought maybe the game's got a good and bad ending, and I've got the bad ending. And while I'm still unsure of that, honestly, the ending is the only truly bad thing in the game. It was just, there it is, done. Fuck you. I hated that. I went back to my previous save to see if I'd missed something. And all I can think of is maybe it's like some of the Metroidvania games where the faster you beat it, the better the thing you get. I hate that. I hate being timed. I hate feeling like I'm under pressure to race. I just want to sit back and enjoy a game. Why does that have to be a thing? So I don't feel like I got a bad ending for doing anything wrong. I feel like I got a bad ending for not being Super Speedy Gonzales, which is a bit of a shit. But graphically, the game is great. Musically, the game is great. Everything about the game was great except the ending. It was just bollocks. It was really bollocks. But if you like a Metroidvania game that's just good, solid fun, I do recommend you try it out. Although if you do get the Evercade one, it also comes bundled with another game called Cathedral. Admittedly, I haven't played that one yet. I'm like that a lot. I get these multiple cartridges for Evercade, and I'll play a couple of games on the cartridge and save the others for later. I don't know why I've been doing it like that, but I've been doing it like that. I know I'm fucking weird. And remember, if you want to see more of the gameplay of the games we've mentioned today, wait till next week. The YouTube version of this will be out. You can see some gameplay of it. Also, when that one comes out, the new podcast episode will be out on Spotify. So there's always something new with the 16 Bitchin' Podcast. It's just not always something that's good. But that's because I'm here. Hooray! Fucking hell. Thank you very much for checking this out today with Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney, Harvest Moon 2 on the Game Boy Color, and Always Awakening, which is a stupid name. Don't forget to share this stuff around with anyone that you know who likes games, maybe podcasts, or is just willing to try something new. And I will see you next time for more gaming talk and more bullshit talk. Bye-bye.